Good morning, guys. IT Live brought to you by Academy of Sports and Outdoors. Eric Nalin from broadcasting from the beautiful woods. And then Coach Dub. So we're going to talk positions of uncertainty. So position battles, but also more kind of downstream effects and new starters. What we know, what we don't know, that kind of stuff. And then most importantly, man, we're going to talk a ton of recruiting. It was a really awesome weekend. Crazy big commit that I didn't see coming. But also what that means going forward as well. Let's start off with team news stuff, positions of uncertainty, because I bet we're going to end up doing like 45 minutes on recruiting. So first things I wanted to ask you guys, we're in a position battle at corner. Eric did a good breakdown, I think, Friday. So what was that between Black and Gilbo?
Well, you know, it's everybody's been talking about Jalen Gilbo going from star to corner, making the same transition that Jahdae Barron made. But a lot of people are more excited about Kobe Black, at least in the fan base. But That excitement about Black is growing with sources as well. We've heard it from a couple different people in the last week that Kobe Black is really coming on, looking really good. You know, 7-on-7, there's a lot of things you can't learn, but there's a lot of things you can learn too. If Kobe Black is sticking with fast wide receivers in 7-on-7 setting, you got to feel good about him doing it when the pads come on as well. He's leaner than he has been in the past. You know, Justin did a good job of breaking that news a while back that they wanted to keep him at corner, and to do that, they wanted to keep him light. So he's a little under 195 right now, and running hip to hip with wide receivers. So I think it's going to be a big battle between Gilbo and Black. You know, Gilbo has experience, but you know, Black has length, size, and just, you know, overall talent level going back to when there were recruits on his side.
Brett, we're going to hit this when we get into the recruiting portion. If I forget you, Brett, remind me. Thank you for the super chat, though. All right. And then, in this scenario, Black wins out, right? What does that mean? Is that Gilbo back to nickel? If Gilbo's back to nickel, we were hoping Jelani McDonald would take that spot. That's because it sounds awesome if he does. If he doesn't, now you have Derek Williams, Taff, and McDonald hanging out in the safety room. That's not the worst thing ever either, because we rotate a ton, man. And I've been going back and rewatching all the games, got through OU last night. I'm okay with that. But still, I think the core reason is we want to get our best DBs on the field. So what does that mean if Gilbo does lose out? Is he back to nickel? Or in some weird case, is he not playing as much at nickel and you split there? How does that work?
Well, you know, I think Gilbo at minimum sets a pretty good floor for the position based on his time there last year. You know, he was fine. You know, maybe he was probably the fifth best DB, but it was the best defensive back room in the country. So they can always do that if they want to, but that doesn't achieve their goal of getting their three stud safeties on the field at once. And also in that same report that I wrote about Kobe Black, I mentioned that Jelani McDonald was taking probably the most reps at star in 7-on-7, followed by Wardell Mack and Grayson Littleton, who we always hear about. So I think it's going to end up being McDonald, especially this first game. You know, we talk about this first game being sort of its own little season, because then they're going to have that September to play a bunch of non-conference. And then I think that's the time where they're going to tinker and mess around and probably rest guys, you know, some of the guys that they expect to be playing heavy reps, hopefully in the middle of January. So I think you could maybe see Gilbo there at star, but more likely he's going to rotate at corner because they like to rotate there as well with Black. It's just a matter of who's going to get the bounty of the reps there. I think it's probably, I'm leaning towards Black winning that. And then Gilbo just playing a lot also as corner, kind of like how Gavin Holmes has in the past.
Okay. Yeah, that works. Cause yeah, watching through these games again, man, I'm like, man, if we can get those guys on. I was watching Derek Williams versus OU last night before he got hurt and all that. And yeah, man, he was able to close on stuff in the run game. I was like, okay, we're going to need him. It's been a while since I've thought about him in depth like that. And I was like, yeah, we need him on this.
Yeah, that was the best I've ever seen him play. I think we were talking about that when he got injured. The timing was never going to be good for an injury like that, but he was playing probably the best, the most comfortable, the fastest, you know, diagnosing his best. I mean, it was bad timing.
Yeah, for sure. So as long as he comes back at health or even a little bit below that, whatever, he's going to be a player.
He'll be a baller.
Yeah, and same with McDonald.
He looks good. We talked about Derek Williams in that report as well. You know, basically all the skill players that are playing a lot, we talked about. Derek looks good. He knocks a little bit more rust off every week.
Cool. And then McDonald, Paul pointed it out because he's torturing himself writing his new book for the Texas preview. But we also forget how many snaps McDonald did play. So there was like a clear three of the top DBs, and then there was only one second tier, and that was McDonald with like 400 snaps. So, like, we think of him as kind of this new player. He played a ton last year, though.
Yeah, and he played in a bunch of different spots. He played 120 snaps, I think, at Star. So that's not new to him either. So they're in a great spot. You know, it'll all work itself out in August, and maybe it'll play out a little bit into September while they figure out what they want to do. But like I've been saying all offseason, you're going to see more defensive backs play for Texas this season than you've ever seen before.
I'm just going to tell you guys, I was going to say, rewatching, man, I can report Anthony Hill and Colin Simmons are going to be really good, guys.
Yeah, right?
I wonder if we can get kind of a Georgia – that's what I was thinking, right? Like the Michael and Walker pairing, right? Like, so the guy at the line, the moving linebacker, pass rusher, I think we can kind of recreate that style pretty damn well too when I was watching last night.
Yeah, right? You throw in Trey Moore as well. Like, who's going to block who?
Yeah. Also, get halfway through Mateer playing Texas Tech. That first half was whatever, bro. That was not Mateer putting points up on the board. So that was interesting. There's some holes in his game, guys. Oh, no. Oh, no. He doesn't know how to set his feet. He's trying to run every time. Okay, guys. Let's talk about other side of the ball. Interior offensive line in general, really, we could do. Of course, we're replacing a lot there. These are going to be kind of question stuffs, but what's the latest on the offensive line? And also, just importantly, man, like rewatching through the season, I did a tweet. Mississippi State, how well Arch did was totally in spite of the offensive line. I mean, we were killing drives with penalties all the time. That can't happen. Even if we're good and stuff like that, we kept shooting ourselves in the foot. So the biggest thing besides new guys to me is discipline. Because we would do it at the worst times too. So what's kind of the latest with all the new guys on offensive line?
Well, I would say that they've had penalties, far too many penalties throughout the Kyle Flood's tenure here.
Yeah.
You know, and always at the worst time. You know, you're on your own 10-yard line. Now you're on your own 5-yard line.
Yeah.
That's been a persistent problem, and I don't know how to explain it, especially with such a veteran group last year. If you want to know the questions about this offensive line, just look at what they're recruiting. They're going after 100 tackles, and then they're looking at Nicholas Robertson, who's an absolute road grader. So they're thinking they're missing a road grader on the offensive line, probably trying to replace DJ Campbell. And then they need a lot of tackles. Tackle depth is not great. You know, they've got maybe 3 guys they feel good about right now at most. And then, you know, they're still trying to figure out the depth behind the guards as well. Center, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. They would go with Connor Robertson if anything happened with Cole Hudson. So that kind of helps. And then Cole Hudson could also be your depth at guard if Connor Robertson is ready to play, more ready to play than a backup guard. I kind of think that's the case right now. Nate Kibble, probably a year before he's truly ready. Andre Kojo, he might eventually be a guard. It's not the most ideal offensive line situation from a depth standpoint, but I do think, you know, all the other reasons we've talked about, Arch Manning is going to help out his offensive line just like he did against Mississippi State. The run game, the tweaks in the run game are going to help the offensive line. The running backs are going to make the offensive line look better at times than they were than they actually are. So I'm not super worried about it, but depth is a concern. You know, lack of tackles is, you know, if anything happened to Goosby, maybe you could do okay with Brooks and Baker, but then you're extremely thin there too.
Yeah. Coach, what do you think, man? Offensive line, tight end, that's kind of your realm.
Look, I want Eric on most of this with the depth. Honestly, you need it, especially going to an SEC play like we saw last year. Nobody expected Banks to go down. Luckily, we had Trevor Goosby to step in and kind of take over that left tackle spot. But going forward in this year, like, you can't really afford any injuries whatsoever. So these guys that's behind these guys, behind the starters, really have to get up to speed quickly. I don't know what it's going to take. Gladiator school, whatever the case, put in extra work by yourself, go out there. I don't know, like the athletes go out there and do 7-on-7. Y'all need to get together and do something together as well. Like, go out there and put in the work, because you got to get up to speed very quickly and show that you can play guard, you can play tackle in a pinch, right? Prove to the coaches that you can play those multiple spots, man. You just got to get up to speed quick as possible. That's the hardest thing to do. You can't really gauge it until they actually get out there and go against, you know, somebody in the fall camp, the defensive line, but they got to put in some work by themselves some kind of way.
Yeah, they're doing drill works with the D-line, O-line, D-line, when the offense and the skill players are doing 7-on-7. But, you know, the coaches just really need to junk up September. Do everything you can to beat Ohio State, and then after that, just play the whole roster, play them young, play them early. Build that depth in September. That schedule in September is a bit of a gift for later in the year.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We had someone ask about Nick Brooks. Yeah, Eric mentioned him as a potential option there.
Yeah, it's widely considered an NFL player, NFL draft pick, you know, kind of similar to Goosby, the high NFL draft pick, totally inexperienced. Who knows? I don't know how.
We'll see how he stands up to pressure. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah, athletically and physically, he's doing great. We'll see what happens when he has to really think on his feet with the light shining in his eyes.
Yeah, for sure. Oh man, you know the locker room was giving him all sorts of hell for that. Man, we would have made fun of him so hard for that. Definitely. All right. Okay, and then any kind of work? Two things: NATO. And then Cole Hudson, command of actual protection. We're not going to get what we've had at center as far as cerebral nature, but, are our calls correct? That kind of stuff that make a huge difference.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Cole in that regard. Like, he's processing quick and doing all the, I even asked, how is he snapping? Is he snapping consistent? That's an underrated part of it because I can kill the play real quick. They've had some poorly timed snaps in the past, Jake, especially earlier in Jake's career. We'll have to wait and see. When they're facing Ohio State on the road, how good he is in that regard. But everybody feels comfortable with Cole. NATO, we said he's in the best shape of his life. Usually, that's a precursor to the light bulb coming on. Hopefully, that's the case with him. He didn't have the spring that we were hoping for, but the physical traits, the athletic traits, are there for sure. And I think, like I said, putting him on, gap schemes more often than not, is going to help him out quite a bit. So I'm not too concerned about him. I'm really not all that concerned about the starters necessarily. I'm much more concerned about the depth, maybe a little concerned about the cohesion, a little concerned about persistent penalties that we've seen in the past. But overall, because of the surrounding parts, I feel like the offensive line is good enough to win a national championship with.
Okay, cool.
Ooh, bam.
Okay. Yeah. We just need to see it, man. Like Eric said, when he's talking about our new schemes, he's talking about like pulling guard schemes of what we're going to do. And if you have DJ Campbell and Umi Azulu, I mean, those are two of the most athletic guards you can pull.
Yeah.
So that's also going to be a lot of fun because you're going to have guys that are really athletic in that regard. We just got to see kind of what happens in the pass protection. But luckily you have Arch, who stands tall in the pocket, will take some contact, will even take a hit. And he's going to need to, if the offensive line needs time to gel. Okay, and then my final point of attack on question marks, and then chat put if you have any question marks too, you got Eric here to answer it for you. So wide receiver. So we bring in Emmett Mosley, who I loved, man. Mm-hmm. I love his tape. I think he's super sound. I think he's going to bail quarterbacks out. I think he's going to convert third downs. I think he's going to be awesome on that kind of quick out, that kind of stuff. Reliability stuff, I think he's going to be great. I think injuries will also do that. So if you think about the offense as the interior guys, the slot and the tight end, you're going to have these safety nets, man. And then on the outside, hopefully you got your burners, your playmakers, right? So we're thinking, in my head, I need to run this by reality. So Wingo, also, by the way, watched OU. What are we doing, man? Get him in reverses. Get him quick slants. Get him stuff up the middle. That's crazy, man. He looks like a thoroughbred when he's out there running. Wingo on the outside. Injuries at slot tight end, at slot Emmett Mosley from Stanford, and then outside more. Does that sound right, or do you think we're going to keep more slot and then try to figure something else out?
I don't know entirely because Mosley hasn't been participating, or at least he didn't the first 2 weeks, and I forgot to ask about him this past week because I wasn't hearing anything. I've heard a lot more about injuries since those two came in. Yeah, I think it's going to end up that way because they like speed on the outside. With more, but lately what we're hearing a lot about in 7-on-7 is more killing it underneath, which kind of suggests more in the slot.
Yeah.
And then Wingo killing it deep, which we know he's going to stay in the boundary and just run a lot of verticals. But I'm with you, man. I was advocating for it all last year. Force feed him. Don't make him read anything. Tell him to be right here. The ball is coming to you no matter what.
Yeah.
Catch it and then run as fast and hard as you can, which he's really good at. So. But I don't think we know exactly what's going to happen. I'll check more on that this week to see specifically where DeAndre Moore is playing. But I think long term that's what it has to happen. I just wonder if Mosley came in nursing some sort of lingering issue or I don't know. We just haven't heard about him out there on the field yet, so it's hard to know. But they've got a lot of different options they can run. Parker Livingstone was mentioned this past week. If Livingstone is playing, that tells you that Moore's going to be in the slot if they're going three wide. Yeah. That's really the best way that works, even though he has taken some snaps there. They like that vertical slot because they love the slot fade. And so, can Mosley do that? I'm not sure. We know Moore can.
Yeah, that's the play that they scored on with Arch Mississippi State was that slot fade to Moore. That'd be cool. And I'm down for Livingstone, man.
Man, tell me about it. Hey, I would say this, like you just said about the defensive guys, you know, you got your starters for Ohio State looking at it as a one-game season. You have a couple other games out there to figure out receiver who can play where, right? Mm-hmm. So you have time to get, you know, get that situated as you go.
Yeah, September, I think September is going to be ugly, and I'm here for it. After Ohio State, everybody's going to be riding high, maybe the number one team in the country. And then, like, hey, they don't look so sharp. No, because they're playing a bunch of guys that don't really know what they're doing yet. Right. They're just going out there and being athletes. So that's the time. That September schedule is you've got to figure out who you can count on in October and November and even further on than that. So I hope that they're going to win a lot of those games by 30 points regardless, but I think they should be ugly at times just because you're playing so many young players.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be a lot of tinkering post-Ohio State. Really curious how the running back room will play out. Eric, what are your thoughts?
Man, I have no freaking clue because I don't want to count out Trey Wisner, especially since he's not going to be the workhorse that he was, that he had to be this past year, getting 20, 30 carries a week. That's ridiculous. That's not how he's built. I mean, he's built for it mentally and from a toughness standpoint, but not physically.
Yeah.
Hearing really, really, really good things about Christian Clark. CJ Baxter is moving well in agility drills, which tells us that he had a good rehab. If they've already got him moving in agility drills with everybody else, there's a lot of demand on your knee in that setting. That's encouraging. There's Jarrett Gibson. I think they're going to play a deeper bench, especially early in the season, again, going into September. Just, you know, that's when you want to knock off the rust of Baxter. I don't think we're going to see a ton of Baxter against Ohio State. I do think we'll see a lot of Clark, Wisner, and some Gibson. How it goes beyond that, man, I have no idea. I was asked this question the other day. You know, what does it look like in the first game? What does it look like at A&M in the last regular season game? I tend to think Christian Clark is going to be the guy that gets the most carries or maybe the most yards. His yards per carry is going to be the best, would be my guess. But they really like what Trey Wisner brings, versatility, toughness, reliability. And then you got C.J. Baxter, who's a total wild card coming back from injury.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing, too, with coming back from injury is, of course, you can be degraded. But oftentimes that rehab makes you stronger, like you're in your knee. You know, you're a little bit mentally scared of it, right, to put things on once you get through that. But a lot of these times, I mean, you see, like, the movements you have to do in rehab. So it's more about trusting your knee again. That's going to be important. And so my notes from kind of yesterday when I was watching OU is that, like, Jaden Blue is going to be missed because we don't have the burner in a rail like wide receivers. So you're gonna need something. That was an important part
of our game. No. Did you read the whole report? I also mentioned Ryan Niblett
This is what I was gonna say. You're gonna have to move Ryan Niblett there because he's gonna have to be the one that's gonna have to do your quick rails, that kind of stuff. So is he gonna be integrated?
Jaden Blue was a nice bell and whistle, but they needed a hammer to help Trey Wisner out more than anything, and they didn't have that. This year they're going to have that. I'm pretty bullish on the group by committee. I'm not sure what to expect from any individual player just because there's so many different variables going on.
Christian Clark is a really good lateral runner, like we always say, but he looks like Bijan whenever I huddle. And what I mean by that is, like, Trey Wisner runs with his shoulders over his legs, meaning that – so he's a forward runner. If he gets hit in the legs, he's going to go down because of gravity and balance. Yeah. Christian Clark, you want running backs that sit down in their seat and then they're lateral, right? So if they get contacted, they can still keep going. Christian Clark provides that in my theory. So I'm excited for that. And then I'm just a little, I guess, disappointed in the Gibson stuff. Because, like, pre-spring, that was the one they kind of wanted, like, hey, man, we need to work on this. And, you know, and now we're hearing, like, still third thing. So is that a light coming on thing? Do we know kind of why Gibson's not rising to what the coaches maybe thought he could?
I think because Clark came back so quick and so ready to roll. We just, you know, because I asked about that after spring ball. I said, hey, we didn't hear anything about Jarrett. Or we didn't hear much about him. He's like, no, he's fine. He's better than he was last year. It's just, you know, Christian's in front of him, and you got Trey, who's, you know, Trey's holding onto that spot for dear life. You know, he's the toughest guy to peel that away. I mean, he's the Energizer Bunny in practice too, man. How are you going to sit that guy? And he's put on some good weight. You know, it's going to be tough to unseat him, but Clark would be most likely. But you know, Trey's still going to play a ton. Yeah, when I tell you, man, Trey's the one that gets practice going.
Yeah, he's the Michael Taft from 2 years ago where everyone was trying to bench him and you just won't because of the mental email.
Right, and I don't really want to. I just, you know, I want to see him healthier at the end of the season. He was so beat to heck, you know, after last year. We don't want to see that again.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Eric, how healthy will Derek Williams be? Wardell Mack at nickel. Wardell Mack, breakout player this year on D. We talked about this a little bit in opening, but Eric, you can recap.
Yeah, Derek looks good. Nobody would tell me, oh, yeah, he's your for sure starter yet. But, you know, I think all signs point to him coming back and starting. He's looking good. He looks better every week. You know, you could tell there was a noticeable difference from first week to second week. Had a good third week as well. Wardell Mack, I think, is going to play a lot as Jelani McDonald's backup, or also when they want to do matchups. If it's going to be more of a fast slot, a guy that's tougher to corner a cover, you're going to probably have Wardell Mack as a corner on him. And when it's more of a physical team or maybe a tight end, you're going to see Jelani out there more often than not. I was told this past week they're going to play matchups and scheme. It said it's almost like basketball, the way they're going to work matchups in the secondary. So,
cool.
You know, I think Wardell's going to play a lot. As far as breakout year from him, no. But I think it would foreshadow him becoming a really good football player. Grayson Littleton's going to play a lot too. That's another guy that you can run matchups with. You know, if you've got if somebody has a Mims, Marvin Mims, you know, you might want Grayson Littleton on that guy.
Cool. Homer didn't do the read. How dare you say that, dude? How dare you? I edit the videos. I hear it. All right. Trey. Oh, yeah, this one. Trey on the bike during the A&M game was a top 10 moment of the season. He was just beat, dude, on the bike. And then they're like, Trey, get back in. He was like, all right, cool. It just shows you.
There's a good bike moment the year before when big old Tavondre was on that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could barely even see the bike.
Yeah. One of my favorite sideline moments, Savion Red. His blow up was a legendary one. I thought we missed him last year. I watched the Barstool interview with Diego Pavia. Did y'all see that?
No,
he was supposed to go Choate. Choate had him at Nevada. And then so Choate was going to get him, which I thought was interesting. He really liked Choate. And then his OC went to Vanderbilt, so he followed him. But it would have been cool to see Pavia under Choate. That would have been pretty cool.
Those two would be a really good match for each other.
Yeah,
both firebrands, tough guys. Yeah, that would have been cool.
Yeah. All right, before we keep going, guys. In honor of your service and support for our country, Academy Sports and Outdoors is offering military and first responders 10% off your purchase, both in your local Academy Sports and Outdoors store and online, all the way through July 4th. I'm excited for that. Exclusions apply. You guys, visit academy.com/discount for details. Shout out to all the people helping this country and helping local governments as well.
Yeah, helping this country this weekend too. This is funny. Well, you know, in defense of Pavia, he's from New Mexico, and I'm not sure there's internet. Having driven through New Mexico a million times, I'm just not sure that there's much internet out that way.
Dude, whenever I drive out west, I'm always – it's just, like, profound how much space there is, you know, when you're driving through it. Because you live in North Texas and stuff, you're like, we're crowded, man. And then you go out there and you're like, man, this is magnificent.
America looks almost the same from about Junction to Riverside, California. It's a tough drive, man.
Dude. And then Josh Pate said, who is Diego Pavia, back this morning. So they're finally getting their internet beef going. But man, talk about a real interview, dude. Pavia, like, that was a fun interview, very candid as you can imagine. Go check that out. Man, that guy's likable. When you play him, you don't like him, but almost in every other context, man.
New Mexico's produced some really damn good boxers, and he seems more like a boxer playing quarterback than anything else. Like, yeah, he's out there to fight.
Well, that's why I was going to say, he's like UFC guy. He can't handle a slight, you know? So it's like he's going to respond every time. It's a fighter mentality.
Yeah. Is that the interview where he mentioned, like, SEC and Big Ten, the only real football conferences or something like that?
Well, no, he said SEC really is the only football conference.
Yeah, and then the only one,
yeah. Okay. They're Big Ten guys.
Yeah.
And he was like, there's three leagues in the NFL, the AFC, the NFC, and the SEC. and then of course I think those guys are Big Ten, so they're like, who won the most recent national champions? Started that whole thing. But man, he's fun, dude.
Yeah,
it's better than the typical athlete interviews. That's for damn sure. Okay, let's see if there's any final questions on kind of the battles. I think we're good there. I'm trying to think if there's anything off the top of my head. No, we're good. National championship, guys. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a really sick recruiting weekend. Final big official visit weekend. I think Texas, what they did, they condensed it down to three, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like that. All right, let's start off. We won't start off with the sugar. We'll talk about some players that will likely miss or intense battle for that kind of stuff. First things first, Jalen Lott. Eric had an update on that this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was a tough one to write. Yeah, you know, I put a prediction for him to go to USC. That's Oregon is still in it. The bottom line is I just don't think it's going to be Texas. You have to look at the entire roster when you're trying to figure out recruiting. And they've got a lot of young guys that had an expensive class last year. You can't get excited about that one. And if you have a real big class like that, you have to know the next year is going to be a little bit different. You know, it's like 2022 offensive line to 2023, huge, huge difference. Yeah. It's not going to be that stark of a difference, I don't think, but that's you just have to expect that. So Jalen Lott, once he wanted to go to wide receiver, Texas got on him, started recruiting him that way. But, you know, USC is being very aggressive to get him. Right now, I think that's where he's going to end up. I don't think it'll be Texas. Unless there's some late cycle intrigue that, you know, we're not, you know, right now we can't predict that. But our sources don't think he's going to end up at Texas.
Yeah. This is a bummer, man. Cause, and also he wants to play wide receiver. And I know I harped on it, but man, him at corner would be absolutely incredible.
That's why I'm not too down on it. You know, I mean, Texas is going to get one of Samari Matthews and Devon Benjamin. Right. And you've got Shalane Bishop that you can go play at wide receiver, who's a better, to me, he's a better wide receiver, certainly more polished wide receiver than Jalen Lott. So, you know, ideally, in an ideal world, you would have Lott. I love him, love the player. But he doesn't want to play the position. I think that he's the 10-year NFL pro. So, you know, Texas is going to be fine. They're going to probably end up with a very good corner, an elite corner, and then you got Bishop that can play wide receiver.
Yeah, I thought you posted an absolutely wonderful GIF when you put, you know, Bishop – from from Juice up there, like, yo, like, next up, he can play receiver, guys. Like, don't get it twisted. So, yeah, we're okay. I mean, I get it. Lots of phenomenal player. I think he's an NFL DB, but, you know, you can't get their minds beat up.
Bishop has, like, 3,300 receiving yards in the last 2 years and 35 touchdowns. I mean, he's a real receiver. Yeah. He's also just a very unique cover corner prospect as well. But, yeah, Texas is going to be just fine. It's just a bummer, and there's a little bit more salt in the wound, I guess, because he's a legacy. But, you know, Texas is going to be in great shape.
Yeah, for sure. All right, another legacy and another wide receiver position. Caden Finley, we're in it with Notre Dame, number one receiver on our board, right? Number one pure receiver. But I don't know if things are looking wonderful there.
You know, he's going to visit this week. On this weekend, look, Notre Dame is a key player in this recruitment. It's tough, right? It's going to be a battle come July 4th on which way he goes. But, I mean, that's confidence on both sides, what you expect. And you got – if I'm a dad just like Jermichael, I want my kid to go to Texas too and follow my footsteps, man, which, you know, that's a great pitching tool, right? You want to be – everybody wants to be like their dad for the most part. But, I mean, you got Notre Dame who's been in this thing from the beginning and really doing a great job just recruiting Jermichael and selling him on great house, you know, going to Notre Dame. So this is going to be tough, man. I know, like I said, he had his visit this weekend. I know we reported, you know, a little up and down, but overall I thought he had a good visit. But, man, Notre Dame has just been more consistent. And we'll see what happens July 4th. I like to see what Eric thinks. But, yeah, I think that, you know, it's going to be tough come July 4th. I think he could go to South Bend, but we'll see.
Oh, man. July 4th, I'll be face down in this dirt behind me. You guys can cover recruiting.
Yeah.
Notre Dame feels confident, and Notre Dame wasn't all that confident a week ago. So if I'm picking up on confidence from the Notre Dame sign on a Sunday night after his OV, that's not the greatest sign. So it could be maybe it's Jaden Greathouse, maybe it's Colton Vosick, you know, where the kid commits to OU, and then, you know, he's a legacy. His dad played at Texas, and then he ends up realizing, man, what am I doing? I'm going to the wrong school. Maybe it's like that. I don't know. But definitely Notre Dame has done a masterful job recruiting him. I think the family is a little bit split on what's best for him, where he should go. Texas has some work to do before July 4th. What do we got? 9 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have the rest of the 6 months. But also, it's like, look, man, if, of course, you want your kid to go to Texas, but also that could end up working against you if the kid's like, well, I want to, Dad, I want to make my own path in this world. But also, man, you're really not going to go wrong choosing between Texas and Notre Dame. You know, it's like your execution. Your education is going to be fine. You know, it's like
those campuses are entirely different. I mean, I've walked Notre Dame the week of Michigan years ago, and that it's an entirely different place. So maybe he just feels more comfortable in that setting than he does in Austin. I don't know. Kid, where was he born? He's not, you know, he was born in Green Bay, I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's where's he more comfortable? And Aledo's not the biggest place. So maybe he's just more comfortable at Notre Dame. I don't know.
Yeah. And then he kind of fit, his play style fits good at Notre Dame too, man. Like just like the sure receiver thing. Like,
but Texas just took a guy like him, Emmett Moseley. I think Finley's a superior. Well,
Chris Jackson's starting to change. That's what I like. Like Chris Jackson's like getting away from like pure speed and going into more like traditional receivers. Well,
that's what he wants to. He wants guys that look like NFL wide receivers rather than, you know, just pure blazing athletes. You know, Texas is recruiting Finley very hard. He's been the number one in-state guy since pretty much the cycle kicked off. And they're looking around nationally. And we don't really like what we see out there. What we do like is going to be stupid bidding wars that they don't have the bandwidth for this cycle. So I think if they miss on Finley, they're just going to stay on him, and things might get more interesting in the fall.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's going to be cool. I'm slyly trying to pull up some tape here. Okay, here we go. So this one was pretty cool, guys. I liked this one. Let's see.
Oh, man.
Richard Wesley. I able to pull him. Reclassification, you wouldn't be able to tell it. Decommits from Oregon, picks Texas. Awesome.
Man.
You know, when he reclassified, I faded him hardcore. I'm like, oh, man, at that position, you're just going to have to sit forever. It's too expensive to have a guy sitting on the bench and all this. And then I watched the tape and said, what the hell? Mm-hmm. It's like getting Lance Jackson again.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, man. Totally surprised by this one. But, man, like you said, most kids can't reclassify and look ready to play. But this kid is, man. He's ready to go. Size-wise, physique-wise already. But like you said, look at his tape, man. Long arm, long frame. Like, you can add some mass and muscle to him. Like, I think he's going to keep his athleticism. He can be 270 but still be explosive off the football, man. I think this is an absolute complete defensive end, man. I love this kid. I like what he can do and what he brings to the table. And shout out to Coach Loudon Clark. First committed to five-star, man. Like, how do you start? You can't start off your career at Texas any better, man. I love it.
Clark's going to end up being a really important addition to this staff, man.
It all starts – the reason we tracked the big boards early on is because that just points the direction that it's going, the class is going. And so when we started taking a good look at this edge big board, we're like, wow, they're going to land some studs. It's just a matter of who. I had an article – last Thursday was, you know, what would define a successful recruiting class. And number one was hold on to Dia Bell. Number two was land Felix Ojo. Number three was land one of Trenton Henderson or Richard Wesley. So mission accomplished. I felt strong they would get one. I didn't know which one. I didn't know when. When Wesley first popped on our radar, we heard good things about Texas's chances, and then he committed to Oregon. We're like, okay, well, whatever. I guess what we heard was BS, but it turns out it was more like Josiah Sharma. Commits to Oregon for a short time and then flip to Texas. So, yeah, I kind of think this one's going to stick. Obviously, they're going to have to recruit him through the whistle.
For sure.
Yeah.
The odds of committing multiple times, I hope, alters it. I was just saying the odds that he commits twice, limits that he'll do it three times at least. Coach, what were you saying? Sorry.
No, I just, you know, get a little weird when kids say I'm 1,000 or 10,000% committed. It's like, man, like, yeah, all right, I hope so, but we'll see.
Yeah.
That 99 reminds me a little bit of Solomon Thomas, too, with his
good one.
Yeah. So that was a big grab, unexpected. So I do, I try to do my tea leaves through recruiting pictures. I mean, sometimes you can see the smile on the mom's face and you know that they committed, you know? And so, but Richard Wesley, I did not see it coming because this is a stone faced dude. He just like no expression. So he looks a little angry in his picture, like his picture with Sark and stuff. But turns out it's not 100% accuracy on my smile reading abilities. But sometimes if you see like Sark, the recruit, and both parents smiling brighter than you've ever seen, it's probably good news, man.
Yeah, but Dre Quinn's family, if you go by that metric, that very important scientific metric, mom was dressed up in burnt orange. She looked like a million bucks. Dad had on the burnt orange polo. They were smiling like they just got the keys to the city, and then they went to Clemson. Maybe those shirts were reversible, had a little lighter shade of orange.
I mean, it's an offshoot of hat science, Eric, so it's not perfect yet, dude, but we're working on it, all right? All right, what does this mean for Carlton? Does this have any effect? I've had people ask about this.
I'm going to say no. think they're two different type of defensive ends, two type of different edge guys. I think Carlton, the long frame guy, like he's going to be, I wouldn't say developmental guy, but he has a high ceiling, right? He can end up playing either side, Jack or Buck. But we'll see with Carlton. But I don't think it has any thing to do with, you know, taking Wesley whatsoever. I mean, you want more than one guy anyway, right? You need at least three edge guys. The more, the better, if you ask me. So it doesn't have any impact whatsoever.
Yeah, think of Carlton like Zena, where he's going to start off at Buck and then probably evolve over time into Jack. He's got that longer frame that's going to take some time to fill out. Question with him is, you know, what Colin really brings that they lack in that position is he can drop into coverage. Now, these guys are a little bit on the longer side, Carlton, Zena. Can they do that sort of stuff? Yeah, maybe situationally, not as well as Colin. Dre Quinn was a good fit for that. That didn't happen. Jake Krull is one to watch for that. I think he can do all that, all those things that we're talking about Colin doing, not to Colin's level, but he fits that type. But yeah, Carlton definitely fits in the class. We need to check back in with him. If they get Wesley Carlton, then they just got to kind of figure out another thing I had on that list of successful class is, finding the eventual successor to Colin Simmons, because, you know, we already know he's going to be a 3-year player. You want that player to come in and incubate right now. Maybe it's Smith Orogbo. It's a little too early to tell, but you want another guy that could come in, have a year with Colin, learn under him, and then be ready to hit the ground running his sophomore year.
Did you see the interview that had Anthony Hill? It was Texas One's podcast. Anthony Hill and Colin Simmons. And Colin, I can't remember exactly, but Colin Simmons was talking about, you know, and then after your junior year, you leave. And Anthony Hill was like, what do you mean after your junior year? It goes freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, dude. And so it was funny. So Colin was laughing. But, hey, Anthony Hill confirmed returning for his senior year, but it was a funny moment for those two guys that obviously need to be out of here.
Okay, those guys are not. That's not Cam Williams. You just tell them to get out of here as quick as they can.
It would be wrong by them to make them stay for a senior year. Yeah, there's some guys you're like, see you, dude. Okay, cool. Let's talk offensive line. Yeah. Of course, we've had Ojo, and we've talked a lot about him. We'll talk about him again soon enough. Not here though. We need to talk about John Turntine. Okay. So early in the cycle, those were the two tackle names. Man, these guys, if we can land these guys, Ojo gets talked about more lately. That might be not the greatest strategy. And so maybe we need to be talking more about Turntine. So what's the latest on him?
Look, I wrote about this last week. It's a battle. Texas went into this weekend, I would say trailing A&M in Michigan. They did a great job on their official visits. But as I wrote, like, Texas had his puncher's chance, man. They knocked his visit out the park this past weekend. And I wrote an article. The dad said Texas did their damn thing. Like, they did their thing, like, from start to finish. The welcome committee, when he made it to the hotel, everybody was lined up there to shake his hand, give him a hug. Like, they felt the love from Texas pretty much this past weekend. So we got another July 4th commitment. Last time I went to one of these things, I was helping my grandma out, and I saw green smoke by the time I got outside. But hopefully, you know, I go one for one this July 4th. We'll see. But, man, Texas did a great job this weekend getting themselves right back in the thick of things in this race for John Turntine. So I can't wait to see what happens. I feel good about Texas' chances, though.
Yeah, they had a visit that they needed to have. I think Texas went in with a very good game plan. They knew that they had to have a really good visit, too. You know, that talk about Ojo being number one and all that's more fandom. They want both. They need tackles. Like we were talking about earlier in the show, they need offensive tackles. Look at the roster. Look at how many offensive linemen they have, and look at how many you feel good about playing tackle in the SEC. They need tackles in a major way. I don't think Turntine and Ojo even they shouldn't have anything to do with one another. You play two tackles. It's like taking Calvin Banks and Cameron Williams. Turntine, maybe he changed a little bit of the projection on him. We have to figure out how fast he can play with the weight loss. How fast will that come back on? I tend to think he's going to put it on pretty quickly. I've got a little bit of a flashback situation here with Kelvin Banks announcing on 4th of July, flat out ruining my 4th of July, Kelvin. Zayden Crempin's figuring in the mix as well. Don't forget about him, the birthday boy. Texas had a very smart edit that went to him for his birthday. They want tackles. That's what we're talking about. Tackles, tackles, tackles. And then they've got, you know, one pure guard. So it's they got to hammer this. They got to get turn time, man. They've got so much time invested in that recruitment. And then to lose it to A&M, if you lose a commit to A&M and it's NIL and you're like, okay, we just weren't going to allocate that money, that's fine. You can have them. KJ Edwards is like that with a deep running back room. That's one thing. But to lose a kid like Turntine, who was tailor-made for this program, tailor-made for the school, the academic curriculum, You know, he's a Texas kid through and through. That's been my read of him. And for them to lose him to A&M on a non-NIL type of recruitment, not a good thing.
It also just doesn't make sense to me. So it's like with the education, like you go to Michigan, I'm like, okay. But it's the A&M's not in the Texas League education-wise. Michigan, certainly. So it's like it's that thing too where I'm like – so it seems like the big things here are going to be education, respect, and then there might be some proximity issues. But it's like, man, Texas meets all of this, you know. So it's – we'll see, man. But A&M's, man – A&M's, hey, man, they've been on a little run lately, man. So shout out them.
Yeah, right.
But also what does this even mean, right? Like you take Ojan, you take Turrentine. These are two left tackles. You can't play two left tackles. So like, how does this even work in the future?
Oh, they could play either one of those guys to play either side.
But they will play right tackle, or is left tackle the premier cool guy spot?
Oh man, nobody, I don't think they'll care. You first thing first, get on the field.
Right.
And they should know in practice who the better tackle is. Yeah, they're practiced together every single day. They've got practice tape to watch, and then the best one's going to play left tackle. But I think they're on a little bit different timelines. Again, we talked about Turrentine losing a little bit of weight. Ojo's probably a guy that can start after a year in the program. I don't know if Turrentine can. Maybe he can. Some are talking about him at guard. I think, you know, Texas sees him as a tackle first. Maybe. Right. You know, if he's playing guard, it's not because he couldn't play tackle. It's because there was a better tackle on the roster.
Cool. Yeah. I wrote about this. You look at his film. In at North Crowley, he's played left tackle. He's played right tackle. He's played guard. They move him around anyway. Like, Turnstile's one of those kids. He wants to get on the field and just dominate. Put me anywhere and just let me go blow somebody off the football. I don't care. I just want to win. And he wants
Brandon
to
Baker
was
out next to him like that. Brandon Baker was damn near a five-star as a right tackle. I mean, it's, you know, who cares? Right tackles get paid in the NFL too.
Yeah, they sure do. All right, guys, before we keep going, let's hear a word from Andre the Lawyer, y'all.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
Well, let's talk linebacker. Let's talk about Tyler Atkinson.
Man, oh man, look. About dynamic off the ball linebacker there is in the country, man. Tyler Atkinson is that. You know, finding out he's living in Austin with the past month or month and a half, he was down here training with DJ, man. That's it speaks well for maybe where Texas stands. But I love the fact that he mentioned that Coach Sark took over this recruitment. I'm not too familiar with baseball. I think Manny Rivera, one of the best closers, right? I think Sark is probably one of the best closing recruited coaches in all of college football, man. So the fact that Sark took over this recruitment says a lot about what they think this kid is.
Yeah, when I first started watching tape of this class, I'm like, well, there's the guy for Anthony Hill. You know, that's the Anthony Hill replacement. And then you see where he's from, and you're like, well, they'll have to pull a Justice Terry move to pull it off, which they're capable of. This is going to come down to whichever high-level elite program has the will to win it. And I think you know what I mean by will. It's going to be very expensive. Can Texas do it? Sure. But if Texas gets him, you have to say, okay, at what cost? You'll have to short somebody else. You have to fade him on probably another elite prospect. But, you know, like I said, if they're saving cash at the skill positions like they are, if you look at the Texas skill positions, who do they lose next year? Who are they guaranteed to lose at a skill position next year? I don't think there's a single person in the program that guaranteed.
They're guaranteed. Yeah, no.
Yeah. Andrews could go early. DeAndre Moore could go early. Right. That's it, really, right? I mean, so they're going to save money at the skill positions to put towards your front seven and your offensive line, and so they have the ability to get them, but yeah, it ain't going to be free.
Yeah, but it is nice. He's been hanging and training with DJ, but also some other guys too, man. So that's important exposure to the city. I think Justin had a quote, you know, this could feel like home. I've never heard that one before, so I'm looking
for it. Yeah, that's original.
there's some type of recruit media training that's going on. They're like, here are your five quotes that you can give the recruiting guys.
It's such a copycat thing. They all read each other's stuff, and it's like, you know, remember, respect my decision, and that took over the world. You know, I would be just as happy with Braden Rouse, honestly. And I love Atkinson. That closing ability is insane. They got to get in lead off ball linebacker. Numbers are kind of a little bit low. You need that next wave coming in and learning, because it's a complex position. You need those guys in the program earlier than you need a wide receiver or a running back.
And say you don't get the Tyler Atkinson, the Anthony Hill, then you really got to be able to read and stuff. You know, if your athleticism can't solve a lot of the problems all the time, man, you got to be heady at that position. So we got to see.
Yeah, go find another Leonga Lafau would be great. You know, they're in a good spot with Calvin Thomas, who visited this week, in Oakwall as well. So they're gonna hit their numbers at linebacker. But you know, everybody's gonna focus on whether or not they got that stud to kind of that takes advantage of the Anthony Hill tenure at Texas. That's what they've got to do now. You know, at a certain level, it doesn't make sense to do it. You know, everybody wanted Mark Bowman, but it doesn't make any financial sense to go get that done. So they've got to find that happy median of a good, really good player, but one that makes sense from a roster allocation financial standpoint.
Yeah, especially a kind of linebacker. That's a weird kind of – like if you're a playmaker, pay him, but it's not always a premium position. So it's just like – it's not an edge, I guess you could say, but he can do both. Yeah.
That's why they're really liking Xavier Griffin, is because that guy's going to be – that guy's going to get you 6-7 sacks a year, even if he's playing off-ball linebacker.
Yeah, that's
true.
Now, Atkinson looks like he'll be hell on wheels as a blitzer. He'll probably get his share of sacks as well. But yeah, they really want Xavier Griffin. I don't see him as the same player. There's a little bit more projection with him as off-ball linebacker. Atkinson, you can see him reading flow here. Not a lot of questions about Atkinson outside of, you know, how big is he going to get? How big does he need to get, though? You know, 225, 230 is good enough for him.
Sure.
Somebody like his skill set, or you get another LaFalle, that's why they're building the trenches up. Somebody, the offensive line never make it to the second level with the trenches that they're building. So, I mean, you can go get you a smart player who can read like a LaFalle and make plays behind the line of scrimmage or at the second level without being touched. So, I mean, Agassi would be a great get, though, because he can do it all, man. Good Lord.
God, I wish there was another Ty Anthony Smith in the class. You know, something, you know, a guy that you can really project as an off-ball linebacker. Okpala and Thomas are very good starter kits. You know, great build, length, athleticism, explosive players. But can they read? Can they play fast? That's the question.
So you mentioned Calvin Thomas at linebacker. I want to talk about him as we try to fill out the room. What's the latest on Calvin Thomas?
Man, absolutely enjoyed his visit this weekend, man. Smiles from ear to ear the entire time. Look, you get to see the everyday life of a linebacker, what you'll be at University of Texas, hanging around the guys, man. I think he just enjoyed it. How Texas plans to use him, just the entire plan academically, on and off the field, man. Texas is just a fit for this guy. As you see, he has a longer frame just looking at him. I think he's a guy you can kind of move around as well. Is he athletic as Atkinson? No, but man, I think he can be a special player at the linebacker position. Super athletic. You can rush him off the edge. You see blitz from depth very well, but I think Texas sits in a really, really, really good spot with Calvin Thomas after this weekend.
Yeah, him and Okpala, you know, we were kind of surprised. Remember, we were talking about, when's this guy going to set his official visit to Texas? Because it's hard for me to project this guy in the class if he doesn't set his OV. You know, so finally the OV happened. We're like, okay, Texas is probably going to get him. And then the visit happens, and it's like, wow, we'd be really surprised if Texas didn't land him at this point.
And he's a true 6'3", right?
Yeah, definitely. 210. So how much bigger he gets? Maybe 230? I don't know, man. He's athletic. I know he played some tight end too, so, man, he can – he's good in space. So, man, I think he's a phenomenal guy. I think he starts out with special teams, but in a year or two, man, you know, this guy can be a player. Not quite sure who to compare him to, which I hate doing comparisons anyway, but, man, he's an athlete, though, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, long arms, too. I want to see what he
– yeah,
man.
That's a good job, Reed. Very patient before he attacks.
Well, he was, like, one that Eric was talking about. It's like he's – like, clearly makes sense. Why is he not being talked about, you know? But you got to make your OVs. All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's talk trying to secure that fourth defensive line spot. Kenny Baker not playing around, dude.
No.
What if it's already secured?
What if it? Whoa. RPM, dude. All right.
Well, like I said, I should have RPM'd him, but I didn't know when he was going to make his decision. And now other RPMs, you know, went in, and I don't want to play follow the leader.
Yeah. Well, I'll do it. Give me one, dude. I'll bet. I want to bat 100, dude.
You should.
I want to have one. I want to be one and done, in and out, 100% accuracy. All right. So let's talk two guys here. Kendall Gervell and James Johnson were both on campus. Let's start with Gervell.
Big G. Big Gervell. Another kid who enjoyed a visit this past weekend, man. I think, look, Coach Kenny Baker's done a phenomenal job. He's out there. Somebody made a joke that I think Baker's going to max out the card, man. Like, he's getting guys left and right at the defensive tackle position. But you look at this fam, man, another solid guy to anchor. I mean, I don't know where you put him. You can put him at the one tech, or you can play him at the three. Another big guy, just disruptive. Can't have too many of these guys. I think you look at some of the national championship teams, they all had depth at the defensive line who could just come in and rotate in and still play with dominance at the front. I think Gervell gives you that. But I feel really good about Texas' chances in this one.
Yeah, my guy in Florida was kind of conceding him after this weekend. And I think that's right in line with the RPMs going in. This recruitment all came down to, is he going to wait till December? If so, then, you know, who knows? There's no point in putting in a prediction because so many things can change. If he's going to announce on July 2nd, all right, that's a game changer. Yeah. And this is right in line. So Texas is in such a great spot. You know, once you get one D-tackle commit, then it kind of, you know, makes other guys think. Corey Wells like, man, I better jump in the boat too. And then Vodder's like, I'm not going to play around. I'm going to get in. And then Gervell's looking like, oh, man, they've only got one spot left. I better take it. Now, do they only have one spot left? I don't know. They're recruiting James Johnson, you know, maybe Lamar Brown with the idea of potentially taking a numbers buster or a best player available. You know, some of those recruitments might not have any resolution until December. So, you know, might as well stay in it. You don't know if one of your guys is going to flip. You know, Mississippi's going to keep coming at Corey Wells. But man, I absolutely love this class. This is like the elite version of what Tom Herman would take. What Tom Herman was really smart about was he wanted an assembly line of grown men coming off where, you know, you get them in the program, they have time to develop. By the time they start playing, they're already grown men. By the time this group starts playing, they are going to be very physical.
Yeah.
They're going to be very big. And they're going to wear down offensive lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any final words on James Johnson before we keep going?
I know he put out that he's going to have his commitment date. He should announce that either today or tomorrow. But I think that's the second time on campus at Texas. I think, to me, looking at him, he looks like a number buster guy. That's an absolute stud at defensive line.
Yeah, it's, you know, if there's a Justice Terry in this class, it's probably him. And, you know, you just changed Florida or changed Georgia for Florida. He's been to Florida a million times. But that recruitment has still gone kind of hot and cold, like Justice has did with Georgia. You know, he committed to USC at one point. I don't think Miami has the gas pedal to get that one done. And so if it's kind of like Atkinson, how bad do they want him? If they want him bad enough, they'll get him. But then that comes with the cost elsewhere in the class.
Cool.
I don't think they need to go get James Johnson in this cycle. You got him last cycle. You took three multi-year portal kids, D-tackle portal kids. You took a really good class last year. You've got a really good class this year. To me, it's they're getting a little bit greedy. It might be a little bit of a diminishing returns. They know their situation more than I do for sure. If they want them, then that's good. You got to trust the coaches. But from the outside, it doesn't look like they have to go get James Johnson like they had to go get Justice Terry.
So what we learned too, we did a deep dive on it on positions bust rates, and defensive tackle was number one bust rate. So they can eat themselves out of a job. They're big guys. Sometimes they don't earn it, right? Their genetics determined they were going to be 6'6". And then their lack of proper eating at times, if it's Taco Bell based, doesn't mean that their size is always great too. So there's a high bust rate there. So I'm down with just taking a billion good options there because they thin out.
But that's right in line with this class. And I agree with that. Except, you know, if you look at, who are the D tackles busting out at Texas right now? Sadir, mainly because Bo left, and that was always a question mark. He's kind of the guy that you talk about could eat himself out of a job or whatever. And then the other guys, they were bad evaluations now, or they were just okay evaluations. The kid that ended up leaving for Vanderbilt was a great kid. Their bust rate at D tackle is not going to be in line with what you see in a lot of places because the evaluation is so good. The culture is so strong. Look at T'Vondre Sweat. That guy didn't eat himself out of a job, even though it looked like he tried. That guy was still in great conditioning, even at carrying 360 pounds. I see it both ways. I think, you know, five D tackles after taking three and you have three multi-year guys coming back and you still have Alex January. I mean, Alex January is going to play a ton. Melvin Hills is probably a guy that's going to play later in his career, at least based on how it's going right now. So it might be a bit of an overcorrection because they were, you know, scratching and clawing so much. They took eight guys in the portal the last two cycles. That's way too much, but yeah. Hey, if they want them, great. Will I celebrate it? Yeah, maybe I'll do a fist pump, but I'll know it came at a cost at another position.
Yeah, for sure. And you're right. It's a good point that we're talking national averages there, but Texas generally is a really good, well-managed team. But I like it. My favorite T'Vondre Sweat story is whenever he went to the Titans and they told him, they're like, dude, you can't be drinking eight Gatorades a day. like you got to go to zero sugar or something, dude.
Ankle's going to swell up.
Yeah, so it's just – T'Vondre Sweat's awesome, man. Okay. And then we want to talk Brown at tight end.
Hey, I think he has one of the coolest stories. That's knowing who his dad is, right? And then I guess stepmom's running around like he gets no better than that. I think Eric says something about it, like this kid's not going to lack for toughness whatsoever. I'm sure it's competition in the household every single day. I wouldn't want to get in a fight with him. Man. No telling what his dad's taught him. But I love the fact that his first couple of clips, he's on defense, man, rushing the passer, right? Yeah. I mean, talk about his toughness, getting after it, but has some soft hands on the tight end. You know, Texas loves to play multiple tight ends. I think this is a guy never comes off the field, so he can play special teams too, right? I think he adds value to a program because he's that versatile, tough guy that this program covets, man. So other than that, man, I think he's a great kid. Got the frame that you want. I think he adds some muscle. Over time, I think he becomes a player.
Yeah, every position group is tied to the room. Obviously in this class, you know, it would have been absolutely stupid to go spend crazy money on Mark Bowman because you don't need it. You got Mark Bowman last year. And you got injuries in the portal. You got Amari Winston, who's, you know, really, really impressing people. So you've got guys. Now this is the perfect take in this class. Maybe not the perfect take, but the perfect type of take. He's a developmental player. He's going to have the toughness to block. You can tell his build is much more tight end than for edge, but he does have an edge mentality. There's clips of him out there in the camp setting playing edge. He shows really good mobility, solid athleticism. Now, if he's a smart guy, knows how to read coverages, you know, Sark is going to scheme him open at minimum. At minimum, Sark is going to scheme that dude open. Now, does he get much more than the play was called for? Yeah, I don't know. Does he have to? I don't know. Is he going to be pretty good? Probably. He's going to have time to develop. That's the most important thing. If they needed an ass kicker at tight end and had to get – and then this is what they ended up with, no offense to him, that probably wouldn't be ideal. But given the class makeup, given the roster structure, they've got a lot of guys in front of them. Jordan Washington, I mean, come on, man. They've got guys. Mm-hmm. He's going to have plenty of time to develop. Yeah. And that's a position that typically takes a while to develop as well.
One, two guys, like – his dad's a 6'7" former UFC heavyweight.
Yeah.
So it's like he's, you know, his stepmom's Ronda Rousey, but there's no genetics there. But his dad is huge and a UFC heavyweight. So you can see he has the genetic profile there. But the willingness is important, right? If you're going to take someone who's a 3-star and on a longer developmental curve, they have to be a good addition to the room mentality wise. Stuff like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, that's what you want. You're not going to question Brown if he tries hard or if he's a willing blocker. So he's going to run full speed on those on those zone pulls, and he's going to hit the guy. The guy's not always going to move a ton because he doesn't weigh a ton, but he's not shying from blocking. So if you're looking for intangibles here, it's got it. And like Eric says, in the context of the room, this makes sense because there's a good likelihood we'll have the best tight end room in the country next year with Washington, Townsend, Winston. We're in a weird transition phase, right? Injuries. We're in a kind of transition phase now, but that room next year is going to be salty. So take some guys who could play in 3 or 4 years and put weight on them.
Yep. So this is a guy, you take him, and now all of a sudden, okay, well, we can go get Tyler Atkinson. Right, because this kid's not going to cost you a ton of money. Whereas, you know, you get Mark Bowman or Caden Prothero, you've got no chance of getting, you know, anywhere they're shorting, like at skill players, like I said, they should be shorting skill. That goes to needs of positions of greater need.
Yeah. Yeah. And tight end, you know, we're used to seeing like the crazy mismatch guy, right? He's in the slot and that safety can't guard him. Man, tight end is super scheme dependent. There's a reason they're pulling on those zones. They're doing that all starts doing that all game because he's going to slip out and he's going to go for 30. Yeah. You don't always need the basketball player slot.
Gunnar Helm is the perfect example of that. You know, Gunnar had intangibles coming out. You know, first, I remember he posted a couple of videos, one of him doing a backflip and another one of him lacing a golf ball right down the fairway with a really pretty swing for such a big guy. And I'm like, okay, man, this guy's got coordination and some explosiveness to him.
Yeah.
He was sort of scheme dependent. And that played out, you know, he was productive, but he wasn't drafted all that high. And a lot of that was, okay, wasn't the greatest athlete in the world, but he was good enough. I think this guy, Kiawe Brown, can kind of fall in line similar to that. Now, I don't know if he can backflip, but his intangibles are looking like he's got toughness, willingness to mix it up. That goes a long way.
Yeah, just if your parents are Brown and Ronda Rousey, I just highly doubt you're going to shy away from much conflict.
Yeah, exactly.
But that could also be a problem too, right? Like, hey man, don't try to truck that guy. Run, you know. So it can work. It can work both ways, man. But that would be really solid. All right, guys. Perfect timing. Any final things on recruiting or just kind of big picture before we get out of here?
No, I mean, they're in a great spot. They're in a really good spot. I think there's still going to be plenty of late cycle intrigue, but they're looking like they're going to load up pretty good over the next month. There's a lot of speculation on how NIL is going to impact this cycle as the cycle wears on. A lot of people think prices might come down simply because NIL is going to transition away from collective NIL to fair market value NIL. There's not going to be as much money floating around. So, I think that's going to help Texas long term on any of these guys that want to wait. So, it's going to be a good class. It's not going to hammer those positions that I've been laying out where they're not going to lose anybody. You got to take care of your roster first. But you know, they're going to do very well. Like we just saw with Richard Weston, they're going to do very well in the front seven.
Cool. Any luck finding DB Cooper out there, Eric?
The problem is, we're near the airport. So when they have that celebrity golf tournament, the private jets are coming over in such rhythm. I just open the windows and take a nap to it. It's just nonstop.
All right. Thank you, Coach. Thank you, Eric. This was IT Live, brought to y'all by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Enjoy your Monday, gang. Thanks for chatting with us. Peace.